755 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now.
Hey, folks, welcome back into a new edition of the 755 is Real podcast. Producer Cam here with you. As always, when I'm at the front of the show, it means we have a live room edition of the series. David and Eric answered your questions in real time on the Athletic app. As always, exemplary questions from you guys, and you brought it today on a Friday when we recorded this, no less, on a holiday weekend when many of you should be preparing for grill outs and everything else. But if you guys have yet to join a live room and want to get notified about those, make sure you're following David and Eric on Twitter at DOBrianATL and at EOF34. And if you're not subscribed to 755 Israel on Apple, Spotify, Podbean podcast, whatever podcast platform you get the podcast on, make sure to do so. We try to remind you folks when we will be hosting the live rooms on the show. And in addition, make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube if you haven't already. We try to live stream our shows there. Good to see David and Eric on your screens. And also you guys have an opportunity at times to ask them questions on the YouTube channel. In today's show, great stuff, as I mentioned before. Some thoughts about Ian Anderson. Is he okay? Should we be concerned about him? What does that portend for the Braves pitching staff? And the 14-run drubbing, should we just move on from that? Any thoughts on that from David and Eric? In addition, trade deadline needs were brought up today. What areas of the Braves roster need some fortifying, need some attention that the team can address during the trade deadline? David and Eric discussed that. And in addition, let's close the book on the Freddie Freeman saga. David and Eric share hopefully their final thoughts on what has been certainly a crazy, wild 48-72-hour news cycle about that. But as always, you guys are great. Thank you so much for your constant support of 755 Israel. We wouldn't be where we are today without you all. And without further ado, here's David and Eric in today's 755 Israel live room.
All right, let's get to it. Evan T.
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
Pretty good.
So here's my question. With how shaky Ian Anderson has seemed all season and kind of the questions around Charlie Morton, is he out of gas? Is this just a fluke? You got to think that with the possibility of Soroka coming back, you don't know what you're going to get. But all that being said, there's no way you can take Spencer Strider out of this rotation at this point. Isn't that right? I mean, would we all agree on that?
Yeah, we can agree on that. We can agree on that unless something drastic changes and Spencer shows signs of fatigue or whatever, but I'm not anticipating that happening. He's in great shape, and he takes care of himself, and he hasn't thrown a lot of innings. Even though he's been out there a lot, he hasn't really thrown a lot of innings because, you know, he's being used as a reliever early on. And so I think right now he's within the range that he could stay in the rotation, but we'll wait and see. I mean, there's so many ifs. You got to see how Soroka does, and, you know, Ian's going to get a chance to turn it around. He's getting chances so far, and they're not ready to yank him out of the rotation.
Yeah, he just has seemed to me to be the behind Freed and Wright is so far your most consistent starter, aside from that one game where he had dead arm.
Oh, yeah, Strider. No, yeah, he's been good.
There's no doubt Ian's been your worst of the five. There's no doubt about that.
Do you think they go for another starter at the deadline?
Yeah, if Ian doesn't turn things around and, you know, they're going to have a chance to look at Soroka a little bit probably before that and get a better idea of where he stands before they can gauge the urgency of that. But I mean, if they can look at Soroka and get a good idea and they don't think he's going to be ready to really contribute, I think it becomes more of an urgency for sure. And you never know. I mean, Mueller could also be involved in a trade. You know, if he's one of their really attractive trade pieces with the way he's pitching right now and his upside and his age, or they could look at him as a guy they want down the stretch. But they've seen enough of Mueller to you know, it's not like they don't have an idea of what he's going to do up here.
True, true.
All right. Thanks, Evan.
Yeah, appreciate y'all.
Yep.
But to answer your question, yeah, I think that they could go out and get a starter and or a reliever, at least one, before the trade deadline. I think those are the priorities.
I agree. Keith J.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for taking the request. Dave and Eric, where does Rosario fit into all this? Obviously, we know that Marcel's been, you know, a liability out in the outfield when he's been there. Does Eddie just go back to a bench role, or do we see this becoming a platoon situation? I'd love to hear your take on that.
Well, normally it wouldn't be it would not make much sense to platoon him with Duvall, because Duvall has been a reverse splits guy for a lot of his career. But this year he's kind of been normal splits. So that could work. A platoon with Duvall could work. Ideally, you want to get Ozuna in the DH role as soon as possible and permanently, and never play him in the outfield again. So that's the plus of getting Rosario back. I mean, right now, it's a pretty easy move. You can fit Rosario on the team. You got Ford sitting there. You just bump him off and put Rosario on. It's not a big deal. You know, you don't have to have another infield around Ford, because it's just so different with the DH. They just don't need that extra guy, because you're not pinch hitting much. You know, you don't. If you have an injury, you can always make a move and get through the rest of the game and make a move for the next day. So Rosario can just slip right in there. Then it's just a matter of how you want to divvy up the playing time. I think a lot of that's just going to depend on hot hand and, you know, injuries and that kind of thing. But you could reasonably expect to see a platoon, some type of platoon in left field. Rosario, by the way, he not only had – I didn't look up and see what he did last night. I should have done that, but I had a 5:30 flight this morning, and we did a mock draft while I
– Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah. But Snit also said that not only did Rosario have a couple of doubles two nights ago, but he also made two really nice plays in the outfield, made a backhand play on the line, and made a strong throw. And Snit was really – the reports were really good about him in the outfield too, so that's good. Obviously, the odds were affecting him early on when he botched that play out in San Diego and completely missed the ball.
Yeah, it's a big deal to have two functioning eyes in baseball.
Yeah.
Gabriel T.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. So this question might predate Eric a little bit, but Dave, you've been covering baseball enough, I think, to know. Has fan voting changed the way that players view the All-Star game at all?
Has it? Well, they've been doing it for a long time, fan voting.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's been a while, but I was just curious, did you see, because I know it wasn't too long after it started this when you kind of began to see players kind of step out of it. And I just kind of wondered if, you know, I know guys like Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, that era, they thought it was so important. And
yeah, different, unfortunately.
Do you think fan voting led to that a little bit? Because when you start now, it's not because your peers voted for you. It's ultimately just – it can become a popularity contest.
Well, Eric can answer that, but I would think one thing that's changed drastically is money.
Yeah.
Guys make so much money now that there's nothing to be gained by playing in the All-Star game, you know. And some guys, unfortunately, don't care that much about the – I mean, I can't imagine this, but Eric can attest to this. Some guys, you can call it jaded, or you can just call it they want the 4 days off, and, you know, the workload is – they just want the time off to be with their family or whatever. But some just don't see it as that big of an honor. But and the other thing is, I don't know if this is feasible. But I think if a guy's elected to the All-Star game or picked or whatever, and decides not to go, if he's not hurt, I don't think that he should be that should go down as having an All-Star, that he made the All-Star team.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That would certainly get some guys to go. If they know they're going to be – it's going to go down in baseball reference and everywhere that they were an All-Star, whether they went to the game or not, I think that removes some of the motivation for going. And if you say –
oh, yeah, you call yourself a 10-time All-Star and you go to three of them.
Right.
You know, I mean, that would change a lot.
Yeah.
That's actually a great idea, Dave.
Well, thank you.
The only thing I could see is guys could – I mean, it's pretty easy to say my hamstring's bothering me a little bit or this or that and, you know, still get the – you're right, though. I mean, it seemed like late in my career, especially guys that have multiple, you know, guys go to it once or twice, and it's the coolest thing ever for them.
Yep.
But a guy that's on his eighth or ninth All-Star game, that All-Star break's huge, man. When you get those 3-4 days off, you come back from that thing and you feel healed up. You know, and mentally healed up, and it's another trip. You know, you wind up having to fly to Colorado from New York or something like that, and then you're meeting a team in Florida, and so it's not always great travel for the guys. But I mean, well, for me, if I would have got a chance to put that jersey on, I was taking it every time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and we were around Chipper, and Chipper certainly didn't view it that way. He didn't go, I guess, enough times where he got jaded, because I know at the end of his career when he made it, he was thrilled to go, and he spoke to the
team. Yeah. Yep.
And I've always just kind of wondered if it was a thing where, like, if you're a player from Cleveland who's at the top of your position in every statistical category, and then somebody from the Yankees that's batting 220 gets voted in before you.
Or Tatis.
Kind of like, oh, this is a joke. I'm not doing this. Yeah, Tatis hasn't even played, and he's one of the leading vote getters. Well, I can just see where that would jade players a little.
They've done a pretty good job, I think, especially in recent years, of getting the people on there as reserves who are obviously worthy of making the team. And they've also done a much better job of getting reliever non-closers on, because they used to only take starters and closers. They didn't take any middle relievers, setup guys.
Yep.
Now they do. And they've also started taking a few utility guys, which they never did. I remember when Omar Infante made it, it was like a big deal that he made it as a utility guy. But now they
Him and Venters made it the same year, didn't they? And they were kind of like the first team to do that.
So, I don't know. I think that they should there should be I don't know if you could add some incentive for going, you know. But to me, it's incentive enough to be in that game. It's such an honor. I mean, especially if you're voted by the fans. But to me, the All-Star game's still a big deal. But I think you've got to go a whole lot of times before you can be so jaded that you're like, you know what, I want the 4 days off. I mean, you got to be somebody like a Pedro Martinez, you know, who goes 10 times and says, all right, it's not that big a deal for me to go.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the trap that guys fall into, is once one guy starts doing it. I remember CeCe did it 1 year.
He went to the Bahamas.
Yeah, he did. And it just seems kind of like after that, everybody's like, yeah, I don't feel like going either. You know, they got 3 All-Star jerseys they can hang up in their house. And like Dave said, you still get that award. It's still showing up on your baseball reference page. So when you get to 15 years in and you got 12 All-Star games, you know, I actually really like what Dave said, is that it shouldn't count as an All-Star unless you go, or if you can prove, you know, you have a real injury.
Yeah, and if you played right up through the All-Star break, then you didn't get an injury unless you want to go so close to fake it in your last at bat of the last game. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't put it past guys.
Yeah, but I mean, unless you're like the MVP of the All-Star game, or you strike out the side or whatever, nobody remembers what you actually do in the game later anyway. So I think that's why guys, as long as it shows up on baseball references, they made the All-Star team. I think guys look at it as, you know what, I can be an All-Star and not have to even go. So I think it should really change that.
That's a good call. Thanks, Gabriel.
Thank you all.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Kelly F. What's up, Kelly?
Hey, Eric. Hey, how are y'all doing?
We're good.
Okay, so a question about everything we heard about Freddie this week. How is that going to affect Dansby's negotiations ongoing throughout the season, end of the season?
I don't think it does for me. You know, I mean, he's a separate player. This drama with this thing's been pretty exhausting even to read. I can't imagine actually being involved in it, but Dansby's already said he's sticking with that guy. And, you know, the Braves, there was one situation where an agent had a printed offer from the Braves and used it to show to another team and up their offer while telling them they had a deal. And I think the Braves said they weren't going to deal with that agent anymore. But, you know, as ugly as things get, when teams want a player and a player wants to be somewhere, both sides can just stuff it down and work it out. So I would look at Dansby's situation completely, you know, separated from Freddie's, and whatever's going on between Freddie and his agent, Yeah, Dansby's not going to feel like he owes Freddie anything to fire this guy or anything like that. If you have a good relationship with your agent, you're sticking with him regardless of other guys' relationships or experiences.
And how about this? Here's another take on that. I think it could actually help in that both sides are going to go out of their way to make sure that this time they both make an effort to get something done so that they can't see. So that, especially if you're the agent, you don't want to be the reason why people point to two of the most popular Braves leaving in back-to-back years because you didn't do a good job for your client. So I think if anything, the agent's going to bend over backwards to make sure the client knows exactly what the team's offering and this is as high as they'll go, and they'll exhaust every means to try to get signed. And from the Braves' perspective, Dansby's having an incredible year. They would have been much better off signing him a year ago, but now that he's
exactly. This
year, and now that he looks like a franchise player they can build around, and obviously he's one of the most popular players, do they really want to see two of their most popular players leave back-to-back years because they weren't willing to pay him? So I think this could actually, the Freddie situation,
it's a tough sell.
Could actually help, that could increase the odds that they re-sign Dansby.
That's a really interesting take. And then one other thing, Eric, and Dave, after a night like last night, I mean, obviously that game was over for a lot of those guys in the second inning. How does that affect the way they come out tonight? Does it at all?
No. There's so many ups and downs in a season. If you're in the big leagues in the first place, you're really well trained to flush the day before and start every day new. It's almost, honestly, if you're going to lose a game, it's almost better to lose like that and check out. And it's so easy to flush a loss like that. The ones that are tough are the games you feel like you should have won. And, I hate to say it because I was a bullpen guy, but we knew this. When we came in and blew a game late, that was the most deflating for a team, is to lose games you should have won. Yesterday, they just got their ass kicked. So you just flush it down and come out ready to play today. It's only one game. You got 162 of them.
And they've got such a great coaching staff to get that done, too, because Snit, that's his mantra. It's like, you can't worry about tomorrow. You can't worry about what happened yesterday. All you can worry about is today's game. And all of his coaches played at the big league level. And
they know it.
So I think
they thanks, guys. Really.
Yep. Love thanks, Kelly.
Thank you so much. Talk to you next time.
Anytime. Alex B.
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Hey, I just had a question for you. Where do you think, what area should the Braves address at the trade deadline?
Well, we mentioned it earlier. I think starting pitcher is a potential, depending on what Ian does from that between now and then, and what Soroka looks like when he starts facing hitters down there and gets in a couple of rehab games, which he hasn't done yet. I think they'll have a lot better idea of the urgency or lack thereof to get another starter. And like literally every contending team will be looking for bullpen help. It happens every year. So, so unfortunately the price is always high because every team's looking for it. So that the Braves are no different, although they have much more bullpen depth than almost anybody. And it's going to improve a lot when they get Matzik here, probably within the next 2 weeks.
Sounds great. Thank you guys.
Yep. David G, what's up?
Hey, Eric, my question is for you. I've listened to a couple of the podcasts and you talk about how important the chemistry is on the team, but especially in the bullpen. I was wondering if you could quantify that at all, if you could just kind of ballpark it. How much does chemistry matter in wins? Is good chemistry in a bullpen worth 5 extra wins, 10 extra wins? Does that make sense, the question?
Yeah, and that's the hard thing, and that's kind of what I think is one of the shortcomings of analytics is there's no way to quantify it. But
the human element.
It's there's no way. I mean, I just know that personally, the years that I was around the right guys, and I struggle in life in general now, not being around strong, tough individuals with good, positive attitudes. Just going to the grocery store and getting pissed off over something small. you need these good people in your life that bring this positive attitude every day, because at times you're weak and you something doesn't go your way and somebody tells you just stuff it down, let's go, it's not a big deal. Things like that, they just help you get through it. But for me, all the teams that I was on where I was with a group of guys in general that was strong and positive and knew how to knew how to pick each other up and support each other. I had great seasons. And when I was on teams that I felt like I was on my own, you know, I really struggled. I learned a ton from teammates throughout my career, just, you know, life lessons. But that's my problem with some of the analytics stuff is I feel like that stuff is so important and there's no way to quantify it. But if you look at good teams, you know, AA has been huge on it, you know, bringing good guys in, guys that'll fit in the clubhouse. And it's worked really well for the Braves. I mean, who saw them win in the World Series last year, but they had a strong group. So
yep.
There's no way to quantify it. I wish there was. But yeah, I don't have a number to put on it. Cause I just don't think there's a way to do it because everybody performs different in different environments. And all you can do is really try to create the best one possible for all your guys to thrive in.
I thought Wash had a great quote in the story I had today about Dansby. Wash said Dansby will never, ever let his team down, his teammates down. He plays for his team. When she said, when you're in a winning culture, every single one of the guys plays for their teammates. When you're in a losing culture, you start to get guys who are playing for themselves and for their staff.
Yep.
I thought that was great. I mean, Wash is a wise old dude, man.
Actually, a good example would be Chris Johnson. He was with the Astros.
Yeah.
And they were doing their rebuild, and he came over to Atlanta. And he told us how miserable it was because everybody was just punching the clock. You know, you show up to the park, you're probably going to get your ass kicked. You got half the teams just trying to establish themselves in the majors, and half the teams a bunch of vets that they've already put up numbers and had good seasons and gotten paid, and they want to win, and they know they're going to lose. So it's just this terrible environment. And he came over to Atlanta his first year, and I think it was his first year he hit 300-something, you know, won a batting title or came close. Finally playing for something, finally being around a fun group of guys. Michael Bourne said the same thing when he came over from Houston. And now Houston's got their winning culture, and you see what guys do when they go there. So, I mean, it's something that you can kind of pay attention to and make your own assumptions. But usually when teams are playing above their projected skill level, it's a pretty safe bet that they have a damn good environment. And vice versa.
Look at the Rays every year, their contending team with that low payroll because they got a winning culture, man. And then other teams like the Mets before this year had a losing culture. Now that's changed. And I think they've really changed that culture by bringing in the right guys and obviously having an owner that's willing to spend money. But more importantly, it's bringing in the right guys.
Yeah.
And they're showing that. So it's too bad they can't have there's no way to quantify chemistry. You could have sea war. Chemistry war.
There'd
the Braves lead in sea war with 7.8.
Brian McCann would be leading the league in that every year because he makes it fun. but yeah, it's just not something you can quantify, but you just got to take everybody's word for it.
Charlie Morton would be a huge sea war guy.
Yep. I was neutral on the sea war. I needed my teammates. But thanks, David.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all.
All right.
By the way, Eric, Michael Bourne, man, he's doing radio for the Phillies and doing some stuff for the Astros, but he was there for the whole series. I ran into him, talked to him a couple times in Philly.
Is it too loud out here?
Yeah.
My bad, guys. My bad. And I don't know if this will make it any better going over here to this side.
We'll just get your question off and then answer it and boot you.
That sounds great.
Right. Hang up and listen.
Making any moves at all at the trade deadline to go get another starter? Are they Soroka? And, is Anderson, is he kind of the guy that gets shifted around when Soroka comes in? Or what do you guys think? I'll end this thing now. Thank you.
Well, we already answered it twice, man. But
what I think of that, Dave, is it's all going to come down to how, like you said, Ian throws the next month. I mean, he's got a track record, so you know guys go through these spurts, but
yeah,
if he can clean it up and put together a strong month, there's no reason not to believe in him and not to believe he can turn it around.
And the one thing, he's not, it's not like his velocity's down 5 miles an hour, you know.
It's been more control,
right? He's not throwing good strikes, man. He's not hitting the locations that he normally does. But like you said, man, you got to look at his track record. This guy's not just been good in the postseason. He's been like historically good in the postseason.
Yeah.
They would not have done what they did the last two postseasons without him. So it's kind of hard to say, sorry, you're going down. I mean, you could send him to AAA if you made it clear you're just going down for 3 weeks to work on this or that. And he understood that. But I mean, they're not to that point yet, but even if they did, it would be a temporary thing because they're damn sure going to have him on this team down the stretch. I mean, unless it's an injury or his velo's way down or something, you know?
Yeah, and you got to look at it as the potential. You know, what Ian, when he's right, can bring to you is probably as good as anybody you're going to get on the trade market.
Yes.
You know, at exactly. their best. So you got to try to get him right. And
it's
one of those things that'll pain you when you go through it if a guy keeps struggling. But if you get him right by the deadline or you get him right by the playoffs, you saw what he can do.
I mean, look how bad Max was like in the first month and a half last year when he had a couple of, you know, he had a growing thing. I mean, he had just had some nagging stuff, but he just didn't look like himself. And then then the second half, he was the best starter in the National League or maybe in the whole majors.
Yeah.
You know, and he has never looked back since then. But, you know, guys do go through stretches. I know it's been really frustrating to watch Ian because he's been knocked around. I mean, he looked like throwing batting practice last night, but you got to remember how good he is when he's on, and it's not getting him down. I mean, he's not losing his confidence or anything, but you can't go up forever with it like this, obviously. But they just had a 21-win June, so it's not hurt him. He's gotten huge run support. So if you look at it, is his one loss record. I mean, they're winning the games he's pitching. I know it's not because of him, but they still are. So my point is, it's not killing him yet. So
yeah. And he's earned a pretty long leash.
And like you said, are you going to get somebody better on the trade market? Not only better than him, but better than Soroka, depending on what Soroka looks like when he starts. You got to wait till he throws a couple of games, I think, to get some idea whether you think Soroka can really help you down the stretch, because that's obviously a possibility.
Yeah, they got time to figure this out, and Ian's earned the right to work through this. He's earned that opportunity for sure.
Yeah.
Hey guys,
what's up?
Hey, a couple of media questions. I know you had Moylan on the other day, and love listening to him. He does an amazing job as an analyst. When him and Brian Jordan were filling in for Jeff, is there any talk of him doing more of that? Because he was amazing, and it can be a tough listen and repetitive some nights just with the usual crew on there. And he brings a whole different analysis to the game.
I thought he did a great job. He mentioned that he wants to get on there more, but it's all going to come down to Bally and who's running it and making those decisions. But I agree with you. I thought he did a great job.
Frenchie is, everybody's got their own preferences and their own tastes and all that. And I understand what you're saying, but Frenchie's really popular with a lot of fans. And there's a reason why they plucked him and gave him that job without much experience at all, because he's a personable guy. And a lot of people like to listen, not so much for the analysis, as long as the analysis is good, but they also like personality, you know? And I mean, nobody's got more personality than Moylo. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But Frenchie has really got a likable personality, which is why TBS picked him up for their playoff coverage when he had no experience hardly, you know? So they're paying him a lot of money, and he's not going to be, he already takes a lot of vacations. So unless he's on vacation. But Moylo, you know where this is going to happen is Moylo is so good at it that it won't surprise me if somebody makes him an offer elsewhere.
Yeah. I agree.
He's really good.
He is. And Frenchie, he's got a good personality. He's having a good time, and he sees a lot of stuff that I don't, you know, when I'm watching. And that's kind of what I look for is just little things, you know, just noticing what a guy's trying to do or picking up on something. And he's, you know, you couldn't always see it in his approach at the plate, but he's a pretty smart baseball guy too. So I enjoy both.
Oh, very smart. And Moylo's not going to have the same perspective that Frenchie does, obviously, as a pitcher, you know, as a relief pitcher. And Frenchie, the other thing is he's really good with the players in that he's still young and they all know him.
Yeah.
And he really works. I mean, he goes down there, unlike some analysts that, you know, not here, but some analysts don't, you know, at they get to a certain point in their career, they don't really go and interact a lot with the players. Frenchie's down there every day talking to the players. So you're getting a lot more perspective on the current team than you're going to get with some older guys who don't really put in the work to go down there and talk to the players, some guys with other teams.
Yeah, he seems to always have a little scoop, too.
Every day he's down there talking to him at the batting cage. Every day.
That's cool. And he's got the respect to be hanging around, and he's not a pain in the ass to have.
Yeah,
longer.
He's funny. They all like talking to him. He's funny as hell, man. That guy's funny.
It's like an extra teammate.
He and Moilo are both hilarious, man. It really helps.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey. I wanted to go back to the Freddie thing, if possible. Sorry, Eric. Dave, you said that on Friday when he came into town, he had kind of an off-the-record thing with reporters. Not that I'm wanting you to divulge anything he said, but you probably saw the Ken Rosenthal article that he wrote where he kind of tried to spread the blame around. Everybody.
Can he have me looking at before he published it?
Yeah. So I just wanted to, do you have any perspective on that? If you put somebody had a good comment about putting a certain percentage on each person that he mentioned in the article about how much blame they had, just want to see if you touch on that.
And I've written enough about it to show how much I understand the fascination with it, because Freddie was a huge figure here. And like I'd said, for the year leading up to it, I couldn't imagine them letting him go. Well, they did. And the fallout has been every bit as bad as I thought it would be. But there's nothing new. And the stuff that was reported, like Doug Gottlieb, there's a reason nobody else reported that, except the former college basketball player who doesn't have connections in baseball reported that. There's a reason nobody else did. And now he's probably going to get sued because he took it too far. While I don't think the agent did a good job at all, I think he did Freddie a real disservice. I do not believe he did not tell Freddie what the last offer was, because that would be malpractice for an agent. I mean, there's nothing to be gained by that for the agent, from the agent's perspective.
You'd never get another client.
Because the client is going to find out. The agent's not stupid. He knows the team, especially in the case of Freddie, where Freddie's tight with Alex. Well, whether it's right away or a year down the line or whatever, Freddie is going to find out exactly what the Braves offered if it was different than what his agent told him. That's not going to be kept a secret. So that just did not happen, what Gottlieb reported. I've said this, and I'll stick by it. Nothing's changed. Talking to Freddie off the record, nothing's changed. It's exactly like Eric and I talked about, how the agent did not do a good job. And Freddie also did not make it clear enough. Is in fact, what Freddie told me supported what I had said all along. Freddie should have taken more. He should not have assumed that the agent was going to make that the number one priority above all else, is making sure Freddie stayed here with the best job, with the best offer possible. Freddie should have when it was coming down to the end, Freddie should have got on the phone with his agent and said, look, I just want to make sure you know, I want to stay in Atlanta. If that means I take $10 million less, don't tell them this, but I want to stay in Atlanta. So you get the best possible deal you can, but do not let them move on. And Freddie kicks himself for not doing that. So that's the part that was his fault. It's the agent's fault that he gave him the ultimatum, because that was Alex is the last guy in the world you should have gave that ultimatum to, because Alex was not going to pay a lot more than they had said they were going to pay. And they were at the end. That was what they were going to pay. Take it or leave it, pretty much. And when you give them an ultimatum and both those other offers are way beyond what they had offered, well, Alex is going to go, well, you know what? There's only one guy out there who's a suitable replacement, and we're damn sure not going to get caught with our pants down and have somebody else scoop in and offer the A's three top 10 prospects and get this guy. And then we're left holding the bag. And then you either got to pay Freddie exactly what his agent wants him to get paid, or you got to take somebody that's a distant second, backup plan. So it was kind of a perfect shitstorm of how it went down, but it's everybody's fault. And it didn't help that the lockout prevented the Braves from calling Freddie, because Alex has been really anal about this, everything to do with free agency, international rules and all that, because when he took over, as you remember, the Braves were under all kinds of rule violations and restrictions. So they've gone out of their way to make sure they don't break any of these rules, that they could get caught on. So they're the last team that's going to call a free agent during that lockout period and break that rule, especially when the agent, if he ended up, you know, going somewhere else, the agent could have said, well, yeah, the Braves were calling us during the lockout trying to get Freddie signed. And that would have been like, the Braves do not need it, the MLB coming down on them anymore for breaking rules like that. So what I'm trying to say is everybody's fault. But to me, most of all, is the agent did a terrible job.
You know, the way I see it is that agent was trying to make the final push and squeeze as much as possible out of the Braves. And, you know, maybe the tactic was just a little off and AA just said, okay, fine. Yeah. You know, we're done then and moved on. And I just don't think that was something that Freddie's team saw happening without a chance to come down on their price or respond in any way. But I think, you know, the ultimatum thing just really backfired.
Right. And Freddie would have never let him do that. I firmly believe if Casey Close had told Freddie, all right, I'm going to give him this ultimatum and give him an hour or whatever he gave him to make a decision, Freddie would have said, no, do not do that.
Please. Yeah. So it's just an ugly thing. And
it's regrettable, man, but it's done. You know what? It's over. Done. Everybody keeps going, can Freddie just void his contract? Hell no. He can't void his contract.
That's a done deal. It's not coming back.
And the Dodgers have got a guy on a good contract that was below market, probably, when you look at the deferred money and all that. So they're damn sure not going to give it back. Okay, we feel bad. You guys can have him back. Wow. You know, I mean, he's their first baseman. And they know Freddie is a guy that is so proud and so professional that as sad as he might be right now, over the course of that contract, Freddie's going to give him every bit that he would have given the Braves.
Oh, they're going to get a bargain.
Yes, and he's going to play his ass off is what I'm trying to say.
I agree 100%. There's no way it affects his play on the field.
Yep. He might be sad about it right now. Maybe he's sad about it the rest of the year. But over the course of that contract, he is going to give them 100% of his effort when he's between the lines. Just look what he did here.
Yep.
I don't even know how he compartmentalized like that. He goes up there crying and draws a leadoff walk. I mean, a walk. You know?
Yep.
So – and he hit two home runs against them when they went out to Dodger Stadium. When he wasn't doing anything at the time, he had two home runs against the Braves in that series.
It's not going to affect his play one bit.
No, it's not. It's just regrettable. The whole situation is regrettable. But I tell you what, the Braves have got a hell of a player in Olsen. And I really believe that 5 years down the line, people were going to look at it and go, you know what? They're better off having 33-year-old Olsen than they would having 37-year-old Freddie at that point.
Maybe. Jack B.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Yep. I got a question about my favorite player, Dansby Swanson. Last year, you know, we heard that we made money
this year, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Well, that's kind of where my question's going. But, you know, we heard that we offered Freddie a contract at the All-Star break last year. Didn't go our way, but do you think that's a priority for us to offer Dansby a contract? And with a guy like Freddie, it seemed like he was so solid and consistent. Having contract negotiations wouldn't bother him. But with a guy like Dansby who's having a career year, do you worry about messing with a guy's mojo like that when he's got it going like this and get him talking about contracts?
No, and they waited on Freddie because they wanted to get the quarterly reports, the earnings reports. They wanted to see how baseball bounced back from the pandemic, what the revenues were going to look like before they committed. That's why they gave Freddie that placeholder contract offer basically at the start of the season, which was below market. But then when they offered him the Goldschmidt contract, you know, after the All-Star break, that's when they got serious about it. When they saw the revenues, what the revenues were going to be. Well, now they know what the revenues are. They once again are in the top two or three in attendance. They're raking in dough at the Battery and at the box office. And they're seeing Dansby, I think, do this long enough now, 2.5 months, where it no longer looks like he's incredibly streaky hitter who's going to go back to, you know, to what he used to be, you know, and be hot for a week, cold for 2 weeks, hot for 2 weeks, cold for a week. I think they're seeing, and you saw Wash's comments in my story today about what Wash thinks about the guy. He's a winner, man. And this is a guy that I think Dansby will take, not a hometown discount, but he wants to be here bad. This is his hometown, and all his brands and everything that he has, are based in Atlanta and about Atlanta. And that's going to be a hard sell if he goes to play for, you know, fill in the blank. You know, it's all about Atlanta, those brands that he has. So, I mean, I just think Dansby wants to be here. He loves it here. He loves Snit. He loves the coaching staff. He loves his teammates. And if they make him a fair offer, I don't think it has to be top of the scale and all that, because they're going to be, you know, there's going to be some couple of shortstops hitting the market that are going to get a lot more than Dansby because of their track records. But I think if you make him a fair offer, he'll stay. It's just that, you know, they got to look at how long they want to go, and do they think Grissom is going to be a stud shortstop, or can they move Grissom? You can't move him to third, obviously, if you're going to sign Riley long term. So they got a lot to think about. But
do you think this is something that happened?
Offer now.
Yeah, do you think this is something that happens before the end of the season? I know Chipper made that comment about Freddie getting courted by all the fine ladies. Do we want to try to get that done before Dansby gets to see what all the other?
If they want to keep him, they'll do it now, because they will not go through the Freddie situation again by waiting till he hits free agency. That would be dumb. If they want to keep him, they got to make the offer now during the season. They can't wait.
I agree.
Agreed. All right,
thanks, guys.
Yep.
It's going up literally by the week. I mean, if he stays this hot for another month after the All-Star break, he's going to go to the All-Star game. There's one thing already. The price is going up. And if he keeps doing this in the second half, I mean, he's like in the top five and the top four in the league in WAR right now. I mean, he's having an incredible free agent walk year.
Yeah. On brand.
All right. Oh, we got a comment from Aaron. Interesting comment from Aaron. He was at the Rome game last night. Said Grissom was playing third. Yeah, he's played some third. There's no doubt he can play it. And he's physically, his size is probably more suited toward third. So he can play them both. There's no doubt. But, I mean, Brace kind of got a third baseman that looks like the long-term guy, because Riley is close to a gold glove caliber third baseman, to be honest.
Yeah, there's quite a few guys they're going to have to start at least floating some deals to, or they're going to get too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, Grissom, I don't want to put Grissom on the trade market, but Grissom is a hell of a trade piece if they do want to make a move. He's a big-time prospect.
Yep. Reggie W.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
All right. Hey, Dave. My question is for Dave. I watched I saw an article with the Boston Red Sox beat reporter where he did like a trade deadline special with Jim Bowden. I was wondering, are you looking to do anything like that closer to the trade deadline, or kind of come out with an article talking about potential trade deadline pieces?
Yeah, I'm going to do one of those with Jim either next week or the week after. Yep. You must have been reading my emails, man. Get a better idea what they're looking at. But yeah, we're going to do one.
All right, Caleb L.
Hey, guys, appreciate it. Just had a quick question. You were just talking about Swanson and Riley and Vaughn Grissom and all that. Just your opinion. I think I know Eric's as far as prospects versus players.
Yep.
But you pretty much know what you got with Swanson, although he's turned a huge corner this year.
Yeah, he's quite a bit different than he was in the past.
Yeah. Do you go with bird in hand and offer him a contract that can get him signed, so you'd rather take him than count on Grissom being another Harris type player?
It's hard, man. I mean, it's hard. But does lightning strike twice? I mean, you know what, how Eric feels about prospects. Eric would have probably traded Harris away. No, just kidding.
Not that level.
Yeah, but I don't know that I put Grissom at the Harris level yet. Now, he's really talented, so he might be getting there. But like you said, bird in hand. I mean, Dansby's a special player, man. And when he's hitting like this, it's hard, because you got to be convinced that this is the new him. But he's done it now for 2 months. And if he's hitting like this, he is everything Grissom could hope to be.
Right.
You know, Grissom couldn't really realistically hope to be better than what Dansby is right now. I mean, he's fourth in the league in WAR.
Right. Yeah. I think the other aspect to it also is you just lost Freddie. You've got a lot of young players. You know, Markakis is gone. All these other guys that were leaders, that are veteran leaders that have been here. And if you lose Swanson and you're counting on another young guy.
Yep. You can't just keep filling that void.
Yeah, you can't pass that torch around too much.
Yeah, you can't just keep lopping off pieces of your culture and expect it to kind of just carry on because it is, you know, the Braves way and all that. You got to have those guys that are the thread that goes through eras and years. And you got a thing going now with four straight division titles. You went to the last two NLCS. You won the World Series. Dansby was there for the whole thing. He is a winning player. He won a College World Series. He's won a Major League World Series. And he's a hell of a player that everybody likes. So I don't know that you can just Riley's not that kind of he's not the same kind of leader. Travis Darno is, but he's on a 2-year contract, and Contreras is probably going to take over a catcher after that. I think you have to keep that in mind, having a veteran guy there or two that is going to continue this thing. You can't just keep replacing them with younger guys and have a team full of young guys and expect to compete.
Yeah, we got that question about, you know, bullpen leadership and stuff like that. You know, it's one thing for a guy to tell you you need to be at the park running and working hard. You know, my first year it was J.J. Putz. J.J. was at the field every single day at 1:30. So what time were we going to be there? 1:30. You know, I'm not going to show up later than J.J. when I got 40 days in the big leagues. And there's something about the way Dansby goes about his work, you know. Everybody wants to say work hard, but with those type of things, you lead by example. And when you see a guy like Dansby having the season he's having, putting up those numbers, playing his ass off every day, you can't really explain to yourself why you're not going to put that effort in when you haven't done nearly as much as him. And each time you lose a guy that works like that and sets that example, you know, you're risking your culture kind of falling off and guys getting a little comfy and not working as hard. So, you know, it's a big hit losing Freddie because he kind of taught Dansby, and you hope Dansby's passed it on too, but you can't keep passing that torch around and just hope things remain the same.
Yeah, I think Dansby's good for – I think Dansby is a good kind of counter to Acuna too. I mean, you know, Ozzy obviously is, but, you know, they're so different, and Dansby is more of the button-down kind of professional guy, but he loves Ozzy. I mean, he loves Acuna. He loves them all, but Olson is a more of a quiet lead by example guy, like Freddie was for most of his career. Freddie spoke a little bit more at the end, but Freddie was a leader by example guy. And that's what Olson is. Play every day, every single inning, like Freddie did. So I think Olson is better suited having Dansby there too, than just all of a sudden Dansby being gone. And here, you know, here's who's left among veterans, among the kind of veteran. I mean, that's not a role that Acuna wants. And he's not gonna. That's not just not Acuna's thing, man. He's an unbelievably talented player, but he's never going to be. I mean, it could change later in his career, but he's not a leader type guy, and they're not expecting him to be. They want him to be one of the best players in the major leagues, which is what he is, and produce crazy numbers, which is what he does. But he's not going to be that unless he changes his personality. That's not going to be his role.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like there's anybody else really on the team that, you know, there's the kind of the part-time leaders, you know, the guys that are going to be here for maybe one or two more years. But Dansby is 28 versus Freddie being 32. That's the other thing. You could give him a long-term contract and still not be hurt.
Yeah, I mean, Riley will grow into it more. Riley already is asserting himself more as a leader, but he's more, you know, Dansby's just, he just fits in that role. And when he's playing well, I wouldn't have been saying this if he'd hit like he did in the past. If he was still wildly inconsistent, I wouldn't be saying you give him a 6-year contract with Grissom coming. I'd be like, but he's made me change my mind this year. He's been so good that I've had to change my mind and go, you know, as hard as it is to imagine blocking Grissom. Like I said, Dansby right now is what you would hope Grissom could become, you know, 28, 27. He's on pace to hit 27 home runs for the second straight year. He plays gold glove defense, you know, and now the OPS and everything else is risen. So, I mean, he's changed the outlook, the view of him.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Cameron Molina.
All right. We're going to wrap up the live room, folks. Thank you so much for joining, as always. If this is your first time in the live room and you guys enjoyed it, make sure that you subscribe to 755 Israel on Apple, Spotify, where you get the podcast. You guys know. When we do these things, make sure to follow David and Eric on Twitter. Also, make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. Everybody, enjoy your holiday weekend. And as David said, 755 is real forever. We're out.